Hello, I'm FNH, and this is the Cthulhu Podcast. This podcast, home on the web, is at cthulhupodcast.co.uk. Welcome to this, the 35th of the Cthulhu Podcast. Today I'll continue to read from Teddy Roosevelt's book, Through the Brazilian Wilderness. And then we'll be featuring a specially made dark poem called Blessings. Let's get started. Through the Brazilian Wilderness, Part 4. Before I followed them, I witnessed an incident worthy of note from the standpoint of a naturalist, and of possible importance to us because of the trip we were about to take. South America, even more than Australia and Africa, and almost as much as India, is a country of poisonous snakes. As in India, although not to the same degree, these snakes are responsible for a very serious mortality among human beings. One of the most interesting evidences of modern advance in Brazil is the establishment near São Paulo of an institution especially for the study of these poisonous snakes, so as to secure antidotes to the poison and to develop enemies to the snakes themselves. We wished to take into the interior with us bottles of the anti-venom serum, for on such an expedition there is always a certain danger from snakes. On one of his trips, Cherry had lost a native follower to a snake bite. The man was bitten while out alone in the forest, and although he reached camp, the poison was already working in him, so that he could not give him an intelligent account of what had occurred, and he died in a short time. Poisonous snakes are of several different families. But the most poisonous ones, those which are dangerous to man, belong to two great families of the colubrine snakes and the vipers. Most of the colubrine snakes are entirely harmless, and are the common snakes that we meet everywhere. But some of them, the cobras for instance, develop into what are on the whole perhaps the most formidable of all snakes. The only poisonous colubrine snakes in the New World are the ring snakes, the coral snakes, and the genus Elaps, which are found from the extreme southern United States southward to the Argentine. These coral snakes are not vicious, and have small teeth which cannot penetrate even ordinary clothing. They are only dangerous if actually trodden on by someone with bare feet, or if seized in the hand. There are harmless snakes very like them in colour, which are sometimes kept as pets, but it behoves every man to keep such a pet, or who handles such a snake, to be very sure as to the genus to which it belongs. The great bulk of poisonous snakes of America, including all the really dangerous ones, belongs to a division of the widely spread families of vipers, which is known as the pit vipers. In South America, these include two distinct subfamilies or genera. Whether they are called families, subfamilies, or genera would depend, I suppose, largely upon the varying personal views of the individual describer on the subject of herpetological nomenclature. One genus includes the rattlesnakes, of which the big Brazilian species is as dangerous as those of the southern United States. But the large majority of the species and individuals of dangerous snakes in tropical America are included in the genus Lachecis. These are active, vicious, aggressive snakes without rattles. They are exceedingly poisonous. Some of them grow to very large size, being indeed among the largest poisonous snakes in the world. Their only rivals in this respect being the diamond rattlesnakes of Florida, one of the African mambas, and the Indian hamadryad, or snake-eating cobra. The fer de lance, so dreaded in Martinique, and the equally dangerous bushmaster of Guyana, is included in this genus. A dozen species are known in Brazil, the biggest one being identical with the Guyana bushmaster, and the most common one, the jacaraca, being identical or practically identical with the fer de lance. The snakes of this genus, like the rattlesnakes of the Old World vipers and puff adders, possess long poisonous fangs which strike through clothes or any other human garment except stout leather. Moreover, they are very aggressive, more so than any other snakes in the world, except possibly some of the cobras. As in addition, they are numerous, they are a source of really frightful danger to scantily clad men who work in the fields and forests, or who, for any reason, are abroad at night. The poison of venomous serpents is not in the least uniform in its quality. On the contrary, the natural forces, to use a term which is vague, but which is as exact as our present-day knowledge permits, that have developed in so many different families of snakes, these poisoned fangs have worked in two or three totally different fashions. Unlike the vipers, the colubine poisonous snakes have very small fangs, and their poison, though on the whole even more deadly, has entirely different aspects. It owes its deadliness to entirely different qualities. Even within the same family, there are wide differences. In the jararaca, an extraordinary quantity of yellow venom is spurted through the long poison fangs. This poison is secreted in large glands, which among vipers give the head its peculiar ace of spades shape. The rattlesnake yields a much smaller quantity of white venom, but quantity for quantity, this white venom is more deadly. It is the great quantity of venom injected by the long fangs of the jararaca, the bushmaster, and their fellows, that render the bite so generally fatal. Moreover, even between these two allied genera of pit vipers, the differences in the action of the poison are sufficiently marked to be easily recognizable, and to render the most effective anti-venom serum for each slightly different from the other. However, they are near enough alike to make this difference in practice of comparatively small consequence. In practice, the same serum can be used to neutralize the effect of either, and, as will be seen later on, the snake that is immune to one kind of venom is also immune to the other. And as we leave the steamy jungles, we get to listen to some music. The music for today is from the Adrian Schuber Orchestra. It's a 1926 track, and it's called Rhythm of the Day. To today's main feature. Blessings is a poem or a poetical work that's been written, performed, and orchestrated by James Patton.
It had been old, even as our earth cooled, some great and shattered space, so vast and grim, a fearful place. The walls between worlds were thin there, were made thinner by men barely schooled in arts and practices, now wholly lost. Men from some ancient unremembered time, when the night was bright with stars and fraught with cries from unknown beasts, and all was buried in the frost of a winter that would barely hear of spring, for countless generations. By what means the men died, I know not, only that in my dreams, which rippled as of dim remembering, the city I had found by way of dreams had said strange rites, then shattered into screams. These stones were old, but not as old as that which hummed in darkness deep beneath the rock. Even as I stepped inside, the blocks lining the passageway, decayed and cracked, seemed carved with sigils. Some bore blackened holes where insect things unknown to humankind skittered in the torchlight, and all the bricks were lined with a fine red dust. The clicking of my soles was the first sound of man-like sentient tread to grace these halls for a thousand centuries. The roof sloped down. I crawled upon my knees. The path descended. My tortured soul felt dread, for I could hear the sound of chaos curled, the beat of drums, the hum of far-off worlds. I found myself alone within a room born of no natural rock, carved into forms that hummed as though the chiseled shapes had drawn an etching in the universe. And soon I recognized the drumming of my dreams, and saw the shadows writhing on the stone, as though the ones who'd called this city home were living still. Knew what I should see. Before me, at the center of the chamber, stood three caskets, each a different hue. The first was golden glittered, strange with dew. The second, Cartoshua skull, was silver. The third was ebon. I shuddered, but was bold, and went to touch the casket made of gold. The woods were old, the leafy screens above glowed in the sunlight, rippled with the wind. Above the vaulted sky, the white clouds rimmed with a gold haze, and all about the grove were wholesome cries, the flapping of white wings and the echo of a waterfall and pool. The floor was dewy grass, the air was cool, and all the earth seemed happy to be stirring. And yet the place seemed strange, perhaps too fair. And suddenly I knew, as though in dreams, this place was false. The woods, the gurgled streams, a paradise of ignorance. The air filled with whispered voices, and the hum of thin reality, and those deep drums. The caskets stood around me as before. The shadows flickered, writhing in the gloom of the dead city. All about the room was the deep drumming and the hum of unknown lore. But as I gazed upon the shadowed wall, one shape seemed strong, or stronger than the rest. Almost it seemed as black as chaos' nest, out in the darkness where the dead drums call. And then the spectre spoke. "It has been long since last one such as you came to this place." There was some form, it seemed as though a face were mumbling some toneless eldritch song. I caught some fading accent as he sighed. "My name was Howard, friend, and I have died." Here in this timeless chamber is a rift, a wound in time and space worn as the world cooled. A place where reality has curled and sprung itself. A place where worlds can shift. The ancient ones who built this city knew of this space. With now forgotten lore fashioned this chamber, lined the walls and floor with signs and sigils. The rift was focused, grew and opened untold lands before their eyes.
"But what of them?" I started. "Where are they now? This city died, and yet I know not how."
"These caskets hold the answer," Howard cried. "Go, try the silver."
I did as I was told, and touched the silver, glittering and cold.
Cold was the place, and loveless to its core. I seemed to be a spirit floating free. It seemed as though this were eternity, and I a shade within its boundless store. No other voices were there but faint song, mournful and melancholy, broken soul, silver and faint, fluttered within the bowels of darkness realm. A weak, despairing throng. And yet these men, for men they once had been, though shapeless prisoners and hopeless silver mist, could not die, forever would exist, bearing immortal sentience, unseen. I would not stay. Dimly Howard called. I left that world in awe, yet was appalled. I shuddered, and was back within the hall of godless caskets. Howard, my guiding shade, gazed languidly, and though my wits were frayed, I whispered hoarsely, "God, man, what in all creation was that night-black, lonely tomb?" Howard, though, was silent. The ghost paused, sighed from sorrow, or from some other cause. But at length my guide spoke.
"These walls, festooned with flitting dark, hold more than shades and dust. These were your viewpoint, prison, and the prize of the silver casket. You would be wise to ponder well each vision, for you must choose one before you leave."
Now, that U.S. drawl was all regret.
"I shall," he said, "tell all." The men, I know not how, claim these three gifts. They are blessings from the gods, or from a beast that wears the mask of God. The gold grants peace, but meaningless peace. The silver puts a rift in place of death to live eternal, but bleak. And now, you must the final offer seek.
And so, I went and did as I was told. The ebon casket, dull and dark and black, seemed to gloat in certain triumph, seemed to rack my brains with loathing. My fingers brushed the old wood, dear God, and instantly my mind was all aflame, was blazing in the light of a thousand suns. Of timeless, clawing night. And all at once I knew what I should find beneath a certain South Pacific sea, beyond a certain unknown mountain range, within one black book upon each dreadful page. All this and more I knew, for I could see what lay in gulfs, what chattered in the wings, of a play not made for man, but for greater things. A rush of death, a stink of cloying white, a burst of raw infinity, and then, with one mad heave, I lurched to earth again, alone among the caskets, save for slight shimmers on the wall of those dead men, and Howard.
Now, he uttered, now you choose.
His ghostly face seemed clearer in the gloom than ere it was before. A longish chin, dark, neat brushed hair. I staggered to this face, and there bewailed, oh, that I never dreamed! Never set foot here. Three blessings, God, these seem to me more curses. A bright but pointless place. An endless, half-dead purgatory, or worse. To know all horrors in this universe. Half mad with raving, half wild with despair, I crouched upon the flagstones, whispering prayers to a god or to some godlike thing. And how it spoke.
The shadows you see there upon the wall chose immortality, the second casket, for that was what they sought in journeying to great Azathoth's court. They shall not die, though they may ne'er be free.
And you, I trembled, I take it you chose to, had dreams as I was led into this place.
I chose the ebon chest, and space unfolded showed me every heartless truth. But my gift was not wasted. I brought tears. I wrote of what I saw, and I spread fear. You will not choose?
He asked. I shook my head. He sighed, but smiled, and once more moved to speak.
These ghosts require a host, but they are weak. When first I came here,
but in my veins now dread seeped.
I chose the ebon casket, claimed a life of turmoil, to tread a lonely path, to be servant to grim god Azathoth. And when I had this worthless planet stained with tears and despair, then did I return here, and as reward another casket chose, the silver. And now my wait comes to a close. You'll not choose? Why then it is my soul's turn once more to walk.
And suddenly my core from out its old familiar flesh was torn. I was usurped by he who harrowed men, and Howard Felix Lovecraft lived again.
Wow. I personally really enjoyed that. You've done a real good job there, James, and thanks for contributing it to the show. Finally, before I disappear into the void between worlds, let me remind you that I'm always on the lookout for more original works to include in the podcast. So if you've written a short, creepy or scary story set in or around the 1920s, or perhaps a story set anywhere that includes elements of the mythos, please get in touch. Let's see if we can't get it on the show. Until next time.
CthulhuPodcast.co.uk